Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today has been a seller building his own private label, as well as doing arbitrage. So arbitrage guys, I always have a soft spot for them because years ago when I was a seller, I did that. There was no private label. Oh my God, it's very tough business to be in. So he's done both private label and arbitrage. Today, he is the co-founder of AmplySell, which is a full-service Amazon agency for established sellers. And when he's not working, he likes to play dad with his two-year-old. And his most recent act is getting sick from his two-year-olds. He's just recovered to make it to the show. So with that, everybody, meet my guest, Joshua Rowe. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. That's a pretty good summary of my life. And if you hear me coughing, we'll edit that out so everybody will know I'm 100% now.
Oh, my God. You know, as I shared with you, as we were talking before the show, coughing was, when I was a kid, I used to cough all the time. And my mother used to say, your cough starts when winter arrives and it stays with you until the end of winter. So it was always a pain in the neck. So everybody, today, you want to listen to this show with the utmost attention, especially if you want to launch new products. And the new year, we're recording this towards the end of December 2023. If you have plans to launch new products, this is where you start. So we're going to talk about launch strategies that will get you success. So Josh, give us your approach. What are your winning strategies when you're launching?
Yeah, thanks, Nick. So I think some of the key things we want to talk about here are leveraging off Amazon traffic, email campaigns, review generating ideas. I'll try to keep it in line. I could talk forever about new product launches, but I'm going to try to share with you guys some of the core strategies that we utilize to have the best odds for a successful launch on Amazon.
Okay. And off Amazon, it's a bit of a controversial thing, but for launch, obviously, it's a different situation. Reviews, of course, when you're launching new, you need reviews, right? So to get sales, you need reviews. Reviews come from sales. How do you get that? And then also, before launch, it's the research, right? So I'd love to learn how you're going to do that. So we'll discover Josh's approach and how he does that. So with that, let's jump right into it. You're planning to launch something new. Tell us, where do you start?
Yeah, and it depends. If you're one of the private label guys, right, and you're developing a new product for market, or let's say you're even a bit larger, right, and you're running e-com and you got to go talk to the product manager or engineering to develop a new product for Amazon, I'm always going to look at customer search terms, customer search volume, and pricing, because that's really where it all starts at. Can we build something at a competitive price that fulfills a customer need? If you can't be competitive on price or have a really high value prop that the customer wants, it's just, you're not going to succeed right from the get-go. So can I be competitive with the right value prop? And then I look at volume, right? Is there two buyers for this, or are there thousands of searches for this? And depending on that is where we kind of make our go, no-go decision. And once you've done those two sort of key aspects, then you can say, okay, you know what? We've got a couple thousand searches a month for this, at least the core keyword. And then when you add in the long tails, maybe that 2,000 or 3,000 a month grows to like 10,000 a month, or maybe it just grows up to 8 or 7. Now you actually have an addressable market. And then going back to what I mentioned at the start with the value props and the competitive pricing, let's say that you use Helium 10 and you do the marketplace analyzer and you see, okay, average pricing is $29.99, but I don't see anybody having this key feature that, needs to be added, or I don't see anybody pricing a little bit higher and adding on this other feature. So you kind of have to figure out like, hey, we can price a little bit higher if we have a better value prop, or we really solve their problem in a better, more efficient way, right? People will pay up for things that solve their problems faster. Or do I just want to be the absolute cheapest in here, which is always tough, as we all know, competing against Chinese sellers. So usually you fall into that first category where maybe you charge a small premium, but it's because your product solves their problem either faster or easier.
Okay, so a few things there. So pricing, using marketplace, analyzer. Tell me what your take is on selling something, as they call it, bigger, better, cheaper.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great question. So I'll give you an example, actually. You know, Alex Hormozi, he often talks about sort of his value equation, right? If you haven't heard of Alex Hormozi, he's this, big famous marketer. He sold essentially gym courses, helped gyms build out their businesses. Now he sells books about how he did it. He owns a million businesses. And his sort of value equation is falls along the lines of the better, faster, cheaper, right? Whereas it's like, can you solve a problem faster for somebody? Can it be cheaper? Or can you just do it simply better? And one thing that I think of is like something as simple as, let's say, a pot to boil water in, or, you know, what do you call those? But essentially, like, you know, you boil water in them for tea. Why am I blanking on that name?
You have electric kettles?
Yeah, exactly. An electric kettle. So, right. So let's say you go into the electric kettle market and the whole market's priced at $19.99 and all of them plug in, have two buttons and heat up water to 140 degrees. Well, what if you were able to heat up that water to 140 degrees in half the time? And even better, what if you could heat up that water overnight and have it ready when somebody comes downstairs? What if it pre-fills itself? Like, what if it automatically plugs into your refrigerator, right? And now it pre-fills itself. And when they walk downstairs, they're getting water ready for them exactly when they want it. So, you can start playing with those angles and developing better products that service the market even better, that people are willing to pay up for. I don't like competing on the cheaper category just because the Chinese are always going to beat you there, right? Like, they're willing to take lower margins. They're the manufacturers in many cases. And then they get all those subsidies to bring products to the market, that it's just like you're fighting an uphill battle there.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing from you is, sure, be bigger, be better, but don't be cheaper.
Exactly. Yep. I'd agree with that.
Okay, I am 100% in agreement with you, because I tell people, do not try to be the cheapest. That is a losing game, because once you get into the unit economics, you know where it goes wrong? This argument that I'm just about to make, I have not heard anywhere else as the most important thing. And it's not your PPC, it's not your reviews, or even your profits. The most important thing that I look at is, what percentage of the total inventory you have in stock is your net profit monthly?
Okay. Interesting.
In other words, let's make it an example. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you have $100,000 sales in a month. Mm-hmm. And then let's say that you have a net after everything, mm-hmm. 20% net margin, which is a pretty healthy number. Mm-hmm. That means you netted 20 grand, right? Okay. So if you netted 20%, you spent 80% on Amazon fees, merchandise, and everything else, right? So how much was the merchandise value? Let's say that you have a real good cost, call it 25%, which is very good, which means that $100,000 sale cost you $25,000 in the merchandise itself. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I say, what was the value of the inventory at the beginning of that month that you had in stock? Clearly, you have to have at least 2 months' worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, sales would stop on month one.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly,
Yeah.
You have at least 3 to 4 month lead time in order to keep manufacturing with the shipping and everything. So right there, you got $100,000. So you generated 20 grand, but you had 100 grand invested.
Mm.
And that is the ratio that I look at, because this is where people run out of cash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you run out of cash, you're out of business. So this is what I look at. So my point is that 20%, which is a very good margin,
mm-hmm.
20% net profitability, and adds up to lesser and lesser and lesser number of dollars as you make your product cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason why I don't like cheapest.
Mm-hmm. Well, it especially applies now in an environment like people could do that in COVID, because sales were just going through the roof because everybody switches to shopping online. Interest rates are zero, so cash is effectively free. So it's like, yeah, you can kind of play that game. But now with e-commerce growth slowing down, still positive, but slowing down, and rates going through the roof, they're getting crushed on those margins because now their cost of capital is higher and their margins are lower. Like you said, that ratio becomes very bad in this environment.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's usually why I say do not, in fact, try to make your product more expensive. As well, how can you take this electric kettle example? How can you mm-hmm. compete with 1995? I can say, well, you create bundles, you offer more value. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, your selling price is going to be around $50, $60, $80. And people will pay for it because they'll be getting value. And by the time you profit, it's more dollars in the bank rather than percentages that give you a couple of bucks.
Right. And that's one of the key things is, like, I see a lot of people come in and be like, well, you know, this is my price. And it's like, well, let's say we go back to the kettles and the kettles are $20 and they want to charge 50, and their kettles, for an extreme example, just comes in different colors. Right. And it's like, well, the additional price has to be commensurate with the additional value that you're providing. Like, you can't just be like, oh, mine comes in blue, nobody else has blue, I'm going to charge twice as much. It's like, well, no. It doesn't work that way. You know, yeah. It's, you know, that's where you can A/B test your price. Maybe coming in blue is worth $5 or $7 or $10, but it's pretty unlikely it's worth $40. And I think that's where a lot of people lose out on the second half of that equation, right? Where they add value and they add a higher price, but then they just go kind of nuts with it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is all part of your launch, right? So this is mm-hmm. One of my favorites, we're talking strategy. So this is, at this point, you haven't launched anything. Your inventory is not there committed yet. Money is still liquid. So what is the best way to get a return on it? And the strategy is everything. And one of my favorite sayings is, strategy without tactics is the slowest route to victory. But tactics without strategy is noise before defeat.
Hmm. Can you walk me through the difference you see in strategy and tactics? Because I often hear things like that and I get confused.
Okay. So strategy, I give you an example. That's the best way. So strategy is, let's say you're creating a product. And you say, okay, we're going to sell this to businesses. This is not a consumer product. It can be sold to consumers. I have a client. They have a pretty, very simple, but innovative product. You know what it is? It's rubber bands,
mm-hmm.
except that they come with tags. So when you bundle things, you know, you often, like, especially if you're bundling the same thing for different mm-hmm. purposes, it's very hard to differentiate, you know, what is what. And so, well, things like food, you know, with different expiration dates, you want to be able to put, you know, label on it. So these bands come with a label. So who is this for? Well, it could be for a home office, and you could price it fairly reasonably, blah, blah. But a strategy would be, we're not going to sell to individuals. We're going to sell to businesses. So therefore, we're going to make large packs.
Mm-hmm.
So targeting businesses would be strategy. So now, tactics would be, do the best keyword optimization, do the best bidding on the PPC, best this, best the other, best images, mm-hmm. the best video. Well, mm-hmm. guess what? If it's all over the place, you know, people are not going to know. And then in the process, those tactics without a clear defined strategy will become noise before defeat.
Okay. Yes, this makes perfect sense for me now. Okay, I get what you're saying. And yeah, and that's so key. If you start out with a bad strategy, let's say you go, I don't know, you're like, I'm going to go B2C, right? Or direct to consumer, but there's no market for it. You're dead in the water.
Exactly.
Like you said, if you have a good strategy, if you're going to the right person, but you're doing it poorly, that can kind of be corrected over time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So right at the beginning, we are now, what I'm taking away from this is study what's available and then create your differentiator and then do not be the cheapest.
Yep.
Right. That's what I'm hearing. Okay. So let's say that we've defined exactly what it is and then we're pretty good about how ours is different than everybody else. Our pricing is good, makes enough money and offers value without being the cheapest. And now we are going to launch. So what comes next?
I think the key thing is reviews and initial sales momentum. So let's just go ahead and assume that, I think it goes without saying that you need to have sufficient amount of product available to not stock out. And of course, it's so hard to forecast. Everybody wants to do it. Anybody that says they can nail it down to the letter, I think is full of shit. Like, it's just hard to know until you actually launch. But I would say generally overestimate. If you're very confident in your strategy, your value prop, like we just talked about, overestimate your inventory needs. And then go to market with a plan for initial sales momentum and reviews. And so reviews, a lot of people are like, oh, Vine sucks. I've got a giveaway product and I'm going to pay for it. But the return on investment for Vine is incredible. And Amazon just reduced the price on it again, I think like a month ago. It's basically, it's a tiered approach where it's like $25, $75, $200. But let's say that you pay $200 and you give away 30 products, which is the cap on Vine. And let's say only half of those people review. You get 15 reviews. That's still $200 plus, you know, 30 free products for 15 reviews is an incredible ROI, because the average review rate on Amazon, if you do nothing, is like 1.5%. Let's be generous and say it's 2% for your product or category. You would have to sell 100 products just to get 2 reviews. So it's like, how do you sell 100 products and get, or how do you get 15 reviews, right? Do you do the math on that? And it's like, well, I've got to sell, what is that? Like 700 products, 750 products to get 15 reviews, but it's like chicken and egg scenario. So for me, if you have a product that can be used by most people, there's demand for it, right? We've already found that, like, hey, people who actually do probably want this. People, the Vine reviewers themselves, will get your product and they will review it. And you'll have a higher review rate than 15 out of 30. You probably get like 20, 22 around there. So you get to start out with 20, 20 reviews. You paid $200 and you give away some free product. And now you've got a listing that people will actually convert well because it has reviews. Now you can do all the other things that you need to do, which is like sending in external traffic, turning on your advertising campaigns, things like that to essentially bring traffic onto the listing now that it's ready to convert like crazy. And so That's why I always say, like, I don't want to run on the whole strategy forever, but I say, hey, overstock your product, plan 30 units for Vine, start with Vine, spend the $200, get those reviews in ASAP. That's one of the review strategies that I would start with.
Okay. So just to clarify, and for those who may not have heard, is Amazon has this program. If you are brand registered, this program becomes available to you. It's available under your brands menu. It's called Vine, V-A-N-E. and you can enroll. And yeah, this was a good development, so to speak. One of the new things that it used to be one price fits all, where you had to pay $200 and you got 30 reviews. Now they have added a couple of other tiers, but I would definitely go for the $200. If you don't have $200 as a private label owner, get out of the business, right? So this will buy you 30 reviews. One little clarification there is if you have a parent with three child listings, it's 30 in total, right? You can't get 30 each. So keep that in mind.
So, yeah, thank you for adding that. And that is spot on. But the benefit is even though Amazon associates reviews with the children, let's say they're navigating in through your parent, they'll see the associated reviews. So that generally it helps apply to all the children. Let's say you have like 20 colors on your t-shirt.
Yeah. So you know what we do, Josh? I recommend this to my clients. This is great for people in health and beauty categories, or anything that can have a sample size, a smaller size. Mm-hmm. I say create that as a listing, and I tell them call it travel size instead of sample. Just call it travel size and do your giveaway on that particular listing.
Mm-hmm.
Since it's a variation, the reviews will be registered to the parent anyway, when visually, when you look at it. And at the same time, you're not going to lose much on the product cost with the giveaway. Plus, because it's small, your FBA fee will be fairly small. And because it's going to be cheaper, your Amazon commission will be cheaper. So this is something that I recommend. What do you think?
I love sample sizes in the beauty category. So we worked with a soap brand, right? And soap, it's variable, right? Some people don't like the way it feels on their hands. Some people don't like the way it smells. Like you just can't help that. There's a preferential portion of it, right? We're like with going back to our electric kettle, right? People aren't smelling it. There's nothing that has sort of a preferential. It's like, do you like blue or not blue? You knew it was blue when you ordered it. You're good. So you want to get a lot of samples into people's hands so you can A, cheaply get people to access to your product and to utilize your product and fall in love with your product, especially, and B, because it's a high LTV product, right? People fall in love. I might buy the same soap brand my whole life, right? Some people are like that, or some people might buy for 5 years. So it's like every new customer you acquire in those sort of high LTV consumable categories, do whatever you can to get them in the door. Because like giving them samples or selling cheap samples, because once they do, they tend to repurchase at a high rate.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. So enroll in the Vine program. And then they say 30, but it takes a long time to get that 30 if you get it all. And when they show up, you're going to be able to see it's a Vine verified or something along those lines. Amazon discloses that. But it's going to be a long while. So don't think that you're going to get the reviews. By the way, if you launch with the Vine program, it is quite likely that all 30 will be purchased at zero cost. So you're not going to get revenue, but they'll be purchased. So your inventory will be gone fairly quickly. You're just not going to see the reviews for a long while. So keep that in mind. And one of my clients did this. They shipped short and they enrolled in Vine. And then within like 2-3 days, they were out of stock already as a brand new listing because everything was purchased.
Yeah, that's the worst. That's why I said you always got to factor in giving away 30 units. If they go fast, that's great for you, right? Because that just means the faster the Vine reviewers claim them, the faster you're going to get your reviews. Amazon on their website, they say, hey, Vine Voice or Vine reviewers publish reviews on average 22 days after requesting your enrolled products. So as you can tell, it's not overnight. It's not, you know, a year down the road, but there is some time there. So if they get your 30 right away, don't stock out. And then, hey, be patient. You'll get a couple in the first week or two, but you know, give them on average 22 days to see most of your reviews come in.
So I have a question, Josh. So as far as your PPC campaign, do you launch the PPC campaign before or at the same time as the listing and then get the Vine? Or do you wait to get the reviews, then launch PPC?
Yeah, great question. And so we actually do a scaled strategy. The answer is kind of yes and no, or it depends. But essentially, let's say we launch and it's day one and magically everything's in stock on day one and we vined it all on day one. Obviously, we don't have any reviews, but let's pretend all of them are, all of our 30 vines are claimed on day one. We still don't have any reviews. What we'll do is we'll be launching what we call sort of long tail campaigns at low CPCs, cost per clicks, or at low bids. Because we know that we're not going to convert well, right? And we don't want to spend a lot of money on advertising and make long-term decisions on what keywords to target, what placements to target when our listing isn't really truly fully ready. But at the same time, you can make some sales even with, you know, zero reviews or one, two, or three reviews, because some people just, your product just matches them so well. So that's why we start on the long tail and we start out with low bids. And then we start to scale that up as the reviews come in. So once we sort of hit 15 reviews, we'll start turning on all of our standard campaigns. And then, you know, once you get 30, 40, 50, we're just running all of our campaigns on the product at that point. So we essentially scale in with low bids, long tails, not a lot of campaigns, not a huge investment, but some investment to start getting those initial traffic and sales. Because as you know, it's so important to take advantage of that honeymoon period.
So as far as the return on that initial launch campaign, PPC campaign, what do you typically experience?
Man, so, you know, let's say you're looking at a product. Let's jump back to your beauty products, right? Beauty products are interesting because they can have a high LTV. There's a lot of repurchases that may occur. You and I are not the only ones that know that. As much as I would love that to be the case, you know, our competitors know that. So what people will do is people will pay more for a lot more sales down the road, pay more to get people into the funnel, into a purchase, because they know for every purchase that, or for every new customer they get, that person might make five purchases. So their ROAS might be something really low, like one, right? For a new customer, but they know that that customer is going to buy five more times, which then gives them a 20% ROAS, or I'm sorry, a five ROAS, which is suddenly becomes very good, right? So you have that effect in the beauty category that, you know, drives ROAS is down, at least on initial new to brand buys. You also have, like we said, you know, we're launching new, we have a no reviews, et cetera, et cetera. Let's say we're still in the beauty category. We might have somewhere of like a half ROAS. So anywhere between like a 0.5 and one. Now let's just jump over real quick to like a hard goods category, something with, you know, they make one purchase every 6 years or something like that. Our launch ROAS might be somewhere around like one to two, or maybe even a high of three, because once again, CPCs aren't being bid up because there's a high LTV. So we don't have that kind of factor driving down our ROAS. So depending on the category, but kind of two examples there, maybe half to one in a high LTV beauty category, or maybe one to three in a hard goods, longer term purchase consideration category.
Yeah, because this is, I'm sure you get the question yourself. I get asked all the time, okay, how much can we generate?
Mm-hmm.
So what I tell people is, first of all, when you launch, review or no review, you have to start your PPC campaign because you need sales. You are in honeymoon period, and during that honeymoon period, you want to get the most out of it and leverage that period to get as many orders as possible, and PPC will help that. So if you don't start with PPC, you're not going to get anything from anywhere unless you have a huge following and then you just send people to your listing, which is rarely the case. So start with PPC. Without a doubt. And your strategy, the long tail, low bid, obviously that minimizes the exposure, but you still will have an ad spend. So I always tell people, and tell me what you think. I tell people that in the first 3 months, this is what you should prepare for. For every dollar you spend in advertising, expect a dollar in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
In month two, for every dollar you spend in advertising, expect $2 in revenue. And then on month three, for every dollar, expect $3 to $4 in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
If you set yourself up this way and then adjust how much you are able to bleed during that time, then you're not going to be disappointed. And what I'm banking on is somewhere along the way, you'll also build up organic rank if your launch was handled correctly. Because I've seen over and over, within 6 weeks, you can be easily on page one on some of your buy keywords that were carefully selected. So do you agree with this kind of a prep plan?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to frame it. And I mean, that's similar, kind of similar numbers to what I'm saying. You know, the one ROAS, you spend a dollar, get a dollar, up to a three ROAS. It's very much to be expected. One thing, I do something similar. I tell everybody, like, look, your new product launch is an investment. So it's essentially, hey, how much are you willing to invest for the success of this product? There's a minimum, you know, that you kind of have to invest to see a measure of success. But then it's like, well, you could, if you have $1 million, we're going to get you sales much faster. Everything goes much faster, but you have to invest $1 million. If you have $1, that might not be enough, period. But let's say your minimum is like 2,000, 3,000, whatever, 4,000 to spend on advertising, and you can get 3,000 back and be okay with that. And then spend 3,000 and get 6,000 back the next month and be okay with that. And spend 3,000 and get 9,000 back. If that's within your realm of investment possibilities, yeah, we've got something. We can run with that. We can work with that. We can build a successful long-term product from that. But yeah, you got to have the money up front for sure.
As you know, Amazon often loses inventory or overcharges fees. With Arty, you can now recover up to 30% of your lost revenue at a monthly flat rate of only $99 with no commission fees. For unlimited reimbursements, you can increase your bottom line. Their automated Amazon-compliant process ensures hassle-free refunds. Visit www.getarty.com/legends and sign up today to get 1 month free and discover your recovery potential. Yeah. Well, I mean, what I tell people is, you need to be prepared to spend $5,000 plus in per month in ad spend. So anything less, I always found this. So when you want to buy, you know, in my early days when I was younger, when I was into all these hi-fi stereo equipment, I would go into these, you know, Best Buys or, you know, the similar stores. And then, you know, the guy would be standing in front and he would say, okay, what can I do for you? And, you know, I would say, okay, I'm looking for whatever. And then he would say, how much do you have?
Yep.
And then, of course, without exception, they would always take you to the expensive one and show you the expensive one. And then, of course, say, okay, but this is a little bit over your price range, but let me show you what we have. Of course, at that point, you're done, right? So just like that. But what I found was there is actually a fine point where there is a line. And if you can just go over that line a little bit, you may not get the most expensive, but you can have a pretty decent change from the next one down. So ad spend is like that. If you spend just a little bit less than that amount that you have to spend, it's wasted money. You really have to stay in the game and then keep spending. So that's why I tell people, you know, don't come in with less than $5,000 and expect that you're going to get $5,000 in sales and then let it ride and then make sure that you're working on the keywords, the bids and everything else, provided that your content is optimized content with your pictures and so that your conversion. So anything less, I say you may be disappointed and maybe just wasted money.
Yep. You're totally on. Like, you don't want to come in and essentially sort of starve your listing from the get-go. It's kind of like a fire, I think, is always the best representation or metaphor. As you know, if you don't have enough wood, the thing's going to starve to death. And then it's like we spend a lot of time for and money for nothing. You definitely have to have enough to like get that escape velocity where we can really build something.
Yeah. And the good news is you don't have to like write a check. It comes out of your Amazon statement every other week. And if you are obviously in debit, then they'll charge your credit card. Then you have another 30 days to pay for it. So if the dates work out. So that's the only comforting, you know, thing that I can tell people. So, okay.
Yep.
So we covered the reviews, we covered the launch, the obviously the strategy part, the launching with PPC. The next one is a bit of a controversial one, is the off Amazon traffic. So share with us, how do you leverage off Amazon traffic? And more important, what is the timing of it?
Yeah, great question. One, I like to start from the start. It's kind of like what you were talking about with PPC. Let's get the traffic on the listing at the start. There's two ways. Well, there's multiple ways to generate external traffic, but I there's kind of two that I look at or that I'll talk about today, which is warm and cold. So warm external traffic might be somebody that's already on your email list. And let's go back to our electric kettle. And let's say that we're an electric kettle manufacturer. And now we have an electric kettle that hooks up to your phone via Bluetooth and boils your water on a timer. So you say, hey, I want hot water at 7:15 and 3:15, right? You're selling this new Bluetooth kettle. Now, if I'm selling this new Bluetooth kettle, first off, yeah, you want to go to your existing market and upsell them or cross-sell them or say, hey, look, we've rolled out this new one. Ditch your old one. Here's a $10 coupon to our new one or something like that. And now people say, well, Josh, why not just drive that traffic to my Shopify? And I think that's a valid idea. I'm not saying drive all of your traffic over to Amazon, but I would carve out a small portion of your existing email list, your existing customers, right? People that have bought from you before, and drive them to Amazon as an investment. So we come back to that investment factor again. So essentially what we're saying is that, yes, we might have slightly less margin. So maybe I give up like $10 for every $100 sales. Maybe I give up 10% by driving them to Amazon, but I'm actually investing in a lot of longer term sales because of the rank that those sales would drive me and the reviews that those sales would drive me. So this warm audience is kind of a double whammy. You drive them to your listing, get some sales from it, and then you solicit reviews from them all in your one-to-one email chain with them. So then you say, hey, I saw you bought our new Bluetooth kettle. Hope you love it. Mind leaving this review on Amazon. So now you're getting like extra ROI on this investment of this small subset of traffic, small subset of your email list going to Amazon. So that's how we leverage warm traffic for not only reviews, but you're also your initial sales as well. Sort of get that Amazon flywheel going, to use a metaphor of the fire again, to really stoke our fire. And then secondarily, you know, you can drive traffic through Google. You could use somebody like PixelMe, which just got bought by Carbon 6. Reach out to those guys over there. But essentially, that's what they'll help you do. Whereas essentially, you can just turn on Google Ads campaigns, drive the traffic to Amazon. It's a very clear ROAS, similar to Amazon advertising. So you can say, okay, I've got $5,000 to put into this, or hey, I've got $5,000 to put into advertising. I'm going to put $4,000 in PPC and $1,000 in off Amazon traffic, because I'm going to get a lot of eyeballs on my listing, stoke that sales. And then lastly, to tack on is add on that brand referral bonus, and you get 10% back on that traffic. So that even pours more into the ROI of your investment in bringing this traffic to Amazon and generating those initial sales and helping you build reviews.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned brand referral bonus program. That's my favorite. So again, for our listeners, if you are brand registered, go sign up for brand referral bonus program that works together with Amazon attribution. So, and people neglect this. If you are going to send out an email to your mailing list, make sure you use those attribution tags. Otherwise, you're not going to get that 10%. That's how Amazon knows that external traffic came in. And then more important, when you log in to your advertising menu, you'll be able to see how much you generated from each one of these campaigns. So What I usually tell people is, whatever your campaign is, create a separate attribution tag. So you can see, like, for example, one of the things that I do, Josh, is I say, the listing that you launch on Amazon, don't put it on your website, but just create the page, but say that purchase will be completed on Amazon. So that way you have leveraged your website. And at the same time, even if you run an external campaign on Facebook or leveraging your social media to drive people to your page on your website, when people see the coupon, the benefit, or whatever that you are offering, if they are serious, they will go to Amazon. So therefore, you're going to reduce the unqualified traffic, so to speak. So your conversion rate on the external traffic will be much greater than sending everybody on your mailing list to your listing. The chances are some of them will not care to buy at the time. They may buy it later, but you don't know. So I always say, be careful sending external traffic to your listing directly without qualifying it, because Amazon is looking at your overall conversion rate on that product detail page. And if you're sending so much traffic and they're not buying, then your conversion rate will suffer, and that ultimately will hurt your ranking. Well, what do you think about using an intermediary page like that?
Yeah, that's the jam, right? Because you want to take, you don't want to, like you said, send a bunch of traffic that just bounces, or to use a layman's terms, that just goes, visits a site and moves away and doesn't purchase, right? You know, Amazon, I don't have data, and I don't know if anybody does, on the effect of poor conversion rates from external traffic. But I can tell you, with Amazon traffic, if you're converting less than the industry average or your category average or things like that, Amazon does not reward you with more rank. So you want to send people that are going to buy. And I would assume that Amazon probably does pay a little bit of attention to your external traffic conversion rates. So like you said, if you can improve that with the extra page, the extra step, by all means, go for it.
Yeah. Now, there is something I want to share with you, a couple of things I heard from two other guests. First of all, advertising on Google. You know what one of my guests shared with everyone? If you set up your AdWords campaign to advertise Google, he discovered, totally by coincidence, that apparently there is a percentage of the Google audience knowing that the product is on Amazon, they still start on Google by searching the product on Google, knowing that they are going to buy it on Amazon. But you know how they do the search? Take the electric kettle example. They go to Google and they search electric kettle Amazon. And yep, when your listing comes up and they click on it, that apparently has a pretty healthy conversion rate, mm-hmm, because you are now bringing potential buyers. Unlike Google traffic, you know, generally it's not all buyers. Mm-hmm. So, but here you are isolating. Apparently, that is a trick that he's used, and fairly successfully, and they get pretty healthy conversion rates. Have you heard this?
No, and that's a great idea. And you make a great point. Like, it's funny because I think, you know, pre-Amazon, and I'm stretching a bit here, but pre-Amazon, like, I remember, like, you would start every search on Google, and then people started, you know, starting all the product related searches on Amazon. And now people are like even searching for stuff on like TikTok and Instagram, right? Like you read about Gen Z, that being their primary place of learning about new products and searching for new products or searching for products. So it's like when people are searching on Google with high purchase intent, like you said, electric kettle, Amazon, like that's a great way to take advantage of that, that high intent or high purchase intent traffic that just happens to be on Google and not, or happen to be starting on Google and not starting on Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. And the second thing is, using influencers. So what do you use influencers for? To bring you a lot of ideally buyers by talking about your product. Well, how do they do that? They do that by producing content and putting it on social media. They have a huge following, and then some of that becomes obviously orders. Well, except that some of these influencers, they may get lucky. And if they get lucky, you get thousands and thousands and thousands of people clicking your link, except only a small percentage buying. So they said that, what is the best way to use this external traffic that are generated through influencers? They said, do not use the attribution tag. Instead, get them to sign up as an affiliate, Amazon affiliate, because Amazon external traffic that comes through Amazon affiliate program does not hurt your conversion rate.
That's a great example. I didn't know that. And I think that it makes sense because, like you said, influencers, you know, the results can be very hit or miss with them, especially depending on how engaged their audience is, et cetera. And like you said, you could get an audience that, you get a million views in one buy. And it's like, well, that sucks, right? So it's like, you don't want that killing your conversion rate.
So they said that we don't want to do this through the attribution program. Otherwise, for your website, for your email campaigns, your social media, wherever you can put your listing, as a rule, use an intermediary page, bring people to that intermediary page on your website, get them to qualify themselves, to go to the listing, and build into that intermediary page your attribution link. So that way you can track how much sales are coming through that those referrals, and you can get 10% of the sales back from Amazon as your bonus, which Amazon loves external traffic, so they reward everybody. So that's the formula, I guess, right?
Yep. And that's interesting. Have you had a an influencer specialist on?
I've had a few. In fact, one of the influencers shared this idea with me.
That's wild. Yeah, I would be more curious to learn more about how people are leveraging that, because it feels like the future, but it also feels like there's a lot of like issues like what we were talking about, where you get a lot of traffic, but not necessarily ready to buy prime traffic.
Yeah. You know, the best way to use an influencer, they said, first of all, okay, so I had this gentleman. It was so great. So what happened was, I had a lady on my podcast. She was working in the insurance sector, lost her job, got married, moved to another state, got a baby, and now with a little baby, looking for a job, not finding it easy, said, you know what, forget it. I'm not going to look for a job. Plus, she's one of those creative people, so she came up with a baby product idea and started selling on Amazon. So anyway, she's on my podcast talking about her experience, how she did all this. So several weeks later, I invite this gentleman, an influencer, to the podcast to talk about how to use influencers. So I asked him, I said, so his name is Scott. Scott, how do you know where to get influencers and how to pick the influencer? It's like hiring somebody. How do you hire an influencer? He said, the most important quality in an influencer is not the number of followers, but that you want someone who has a passion for your product. That's what you want. And he said, those who have small number of followers, they call micro influencers, they are even better because they're not going to ask you for payment. So they just love your product and they are looking to build themselves up to be one of those big boys who have millions of followers. So therefore they need this. So get those and get 10, 12, 15 of those. It's much better than getting one big one. Number two, Third thing he said that you want to do is you get the influencer to record a video, post it on YouTube, and then get people to, you know, come to your product. But then also you take his video and post it on your social channels all over. So you're getting the influencer to produce the stuff, but you are using the video in your social channels. So that way you are leveraging multiple audiences. And the fourth thing is, if you can do this and the influencer agrees, get the influencer to do an Amazon live session and then get them to, you know, promote it on, because they're going to promote themselves that they're going to be on Amazon Live, and Amazon Live will produce, you know, distribute that all over. And that's another way to leverage influencers. So it's just ideas that came out of it.
And that is so helpful. And that's, first off, props on you for having such a good memory and remembering his whole process like that. That's impressive in of itself. But like you said, the micro influencers and the passion, like those are the people that I know personally, I buy from the most is when I see somebody that's really excited, that really believes in the product, that is like, act as if it's their own product. And like you said, those are going to be the micro influencers, not the Taylor Swifts of the world, or, you know, those really big, big names.
Well, also one other thing that he said about Amazon Live advantage is Amazon Live will produce a video, which then you can circulate yourself, which will have a shoppable link in it. So that shoppable link is a huge advantage. You're going from video direct to the listing. So it's something that influencers can do for you by appearing on Amazon Live.
Yeah, exactly. Amazon Live, we haven't had good results with it live. Like, you didn't get a lot of traffic. But like you said, getting that shoppable link and then something where you can put it where it gets a lot more traffic is, I think, probably the way to go. That's interesting. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, there's so much to do. And, you know, we talk about this, but it's so hard to put all the ducks in a row and the whole thing. It's like an orchestra, right? So you are a conductor and then you're bringing everything together and pulling them in one by one.
Well, and like you, there's just so many things you can do. Like, we're just talking ad strategies and, you know, launch strategies. And we've just, like, I could go for another hour talking about launch strategies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, Josh, let's now get to know you a little bit. Enough business talk. So tell us about Josh. Where did you grow up? What was it like? What I'm interested in is, usually I tell people, I'm not interested in your resume. I'm interested in your early life experiences. You are an entrepreneur. You're running your own business. When was the first time as a kid that you had this entrepreneurial thing that now, looking back, that you know about?
Yeah, it's funny. I wish I had an original story, but like most kids, I started a lemonade stand. And I think that kind of like sparked the idea of like, oh, I can exchange my thoughtful talents, or, you know, what I could think of and what I could create for money. Then I could then go, I don't know. At the time, I was probably interested in going to the beach and playing with friends.
Whose idea was it to sell lemonade? Was it you or your parents said, go do this?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it was mine. So you got to remember, this is two, you know, we're talking selling lemonade. I was like 8 or 9, and this is before the internet. So it's not like I do specifically remember you know, there was no internet, or there wasn't an internet like what we have today. Right. So it wasn't like I could just go on the internet and be like, hey, great business ideas. What I did was, I remember getting books. I do remember getting books from the library, and I don't remember if lemonade stands were on it, but getting, you know, how to start your own business books. I got a whole bunch of them, read through them, and then I tried a bunch of ideas. The lemonade stand is one that stands out to me because that's one, you know, I made the lemonade. I walked down to the end of my street to get to the bigger road where I got more traffic. Hey, look at that. Traffic still applies today. I went to a place where I could get more traffic, and I brought my lemonade there and sold it.
So, but you see, you went to the library to get some how to start your own business books. Why? I mean, why? Why did you want to do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that as a kid, I always had a penchant for independence. And I think that doing things on my own, figuring things out on my own, doing things that gave me more independence and responsibility, I enjoyed all of that. And so for me, being an entrepreneur at the time, you know, I don't even know if I was using that term, but rather just starting businesses, like gave me, it was all mine. Like I built it, I put it together. I walked, you know, I made the lemonade. I walked down to the bigger traffic road, and I stood out there and tried to sell my lemonade. Like I think that all of it being mine and something that I created, it gave me a great sense of pride. And so for me, like, I mean, you can have that in a normal career too, but for me, that's kind of just what I attached that sense of ownership to, and that joy from ownership from.
So you said a few things, but the first you started with independence. So as an 8-year-old, I mean, you independent. What do you mean by independent? You want to live by yourself? You don't want to be independent at 8 years old, right? So but then you use the words ownership and pride. So was it independence? If I think, so, were you not already independent enough, you know, living at home? And then the pride, was it the pride or ownership? Which one?
Yeah, it's a fun question because even as a young kid, like, I wanted to, not in a bad way, not that I didn't like my parents or anything like that, but I always kind of like wanted to run away from home, but like have an adventure sort of way. Like, I don't know if a lot of your listeners will have read the book Hatchet, I think is what it's called. But it's basically about this kid that runs away from home, lives out in the woods, catches a falcon, like a baby falcon, and raises it, and then like lives in the woods off the grid with his falcon that catches meat for him. And like that book fascinated me. So I had sort of that like independent, I want to go out on my own, do my own thing kind of streak in me. And then I think that's what kind of like lended me or kind of leaned me towards being interested in the business stuff. And then I think what made me stick with the business stuff was the sense of ownership that like everything, all the outcomes are mine, right? Like everything that happens from this business is a result of the effort that I put into it, right? And so when you have a positive outcome, like, oh, I made some money on my lemonade stand, I can now go to the beach or, you know, get an ice cream cone or whatever, it gives you that sense of sort of pride, like, wow, I did this, I built this, like I made something of value. And I mean, that can really apply to anything for anybody, you know, even as, you know, like art, you're creating something, you're making something that adds value to the world, can, I think, brings along a sense of pride. Like I've always wanted to be, you know, to steal Arnold Schwarzenegger's new book title called Be Useful. I think that it's a great way to think about life, is to be useful and to make things and build things that add value.
Yeah, I'm hearing that sense of ownership is very valuable to you.
Yeah, I think that I take a lot of like
is
you
it,
know
is it,
okay.
It having like a possession, or is it the sense of your talent to create something of your own? Which one?
I think it's a sense of being able to be like, I did that. Like I built that. Even now, like with my agency, I take I take great pride in like, hey, we have an agency, you know, we employ 18 people across the world. You know, we've grown brands by an average of 25 to 30% year over year since our inception. You know, and then I can even look at specific brands and be like, wow, we added all this value for them. They doubled their sales, or they 50% of their sales. And I'm not tuning our own horn, right? Like not everything is a success, but like just all that is some successful stuff that I can look at and be like, wow, like we did that.
Yeah. You know, the reason I'm asking this, because I want to get to the root cause of your, what is motivating you. And in my business organization, we have saying that you get to find out the root cause of something by asking the question why 7 times. So you keep digging, you know, why, then why that, why this, why. So and then after hearing you, it started with independence and then turned into ownership of something that you built. But really, you know what I'm hearing is pride. You are a proud person, and then creating these things, building the building a product, service, an agency. So it makes you proud. So that's what's driving me. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I was just on LinkedIn the other day, and I forget their names, but one of the guys that runs a very successful drink products company was like, hey, every time I go in the store and I see my drink on the shelves, I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Like, I did that. I built that product, designed that product, did all the work to get this product in front of you on the shelf at Walmart, which is very hard to do. And that what he said resonates with me, and I think agrees with a lot of what you're saying about how I think about things is like, you know, we run an agency now, so it's less visible. It's pretty much only visible to our clients. But I totally got what that guy was saying with that. I was like, yes, I get that. And that resonates with me.
Yeah, pride is this thing. So the reason why I say this is because, you know, they talk about company values. If you want to build a company culture, it starts with what the company values are. So you have to define your values. And then they give you this 15 different values that you have to memorize. Yep. So I buy into the idea of culture, company values, but having 15 of them, and then it's too much. So when I decided to do it, I sat down and thought about what's important to me. And I said, but more important, I thought, what I'm going to do is I'm going to provide something for every team member in my company that they can take or run to whenever they are stuck and use it as if it's like a compass to show them the right way to go, like the North Star, like the compass. That's what the values should do. Mm-hmm. So I said, just like you have, you look up at the North Star, you look at the compass, cannot be too many things. So I came up with two. Very simple. And you're going to laugh when you hear the first one. Pride, which means do the job in a way that will make you proud. Mm-hmm. Don't do the best you can. Don't, first of all, I say, never say, I've done my best. It's a defensive statement. You say that only when something goes wrong. Second, if you say to somebody ahead of time, I'm going to do my best. Well, guess what? How would you like it if somebody that you are hiring said, you know what, I'm going to work here, but I don't think I'm going to do my best, but I'll give it my best shot. You telling me you're going to do your best is taken for granted. That's expected anyway. And if you say after the fact, I've done my best, you failed. So don't do any of these. If you do the job in a way that will make you proud, you are always going to be competing with yourself at the end of the day, and you'll deliver. The second one is results. Always have something to show for. Don't tell me, oh, I worked all night, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
So always have something to show for. And if you find yourself not seeing that you could show for the work that you've been doing, stop, change what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so that way you won't be wasting your time, and always do things in a way that will make you proud. So it sounds to me like pride is a big deal for you.
I just want to jump back to that one that you mentioned, because that one's been so important for me to learn in life. Is a lot of people say they work hard, and I would say I work hard, right? Everybody says they work hard, but there's a big difference between working hard and getting a lot done.
Right.
So what I've started doing is like, I've started kind of keeping sort of a daily journal, and I just write down what I got done at the end of the day. So in other words, it's like, you know, maybe I sent out like 20 sales emails to prospective clients. You know, I educated two of my team on how to do a particular task. And then I went and created the SOP for it. Like, that's getting stuff done. I think it's far more valuable to look at that and pay attention to that versus being like, oh, I was really busy today. But like, busyness can just be a feeling, like I feel busy, or you might just have been really stressed all day, but it doesn't necessarily mean you got anything done. I think by focusing on what you got done, it just clears your mind of all the other BS. And maybe you are busy, maybe you're not, but really at the end of the day, what you got done is all that's going to matter.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I tell you what, we got a lot done in this recording. So
Holy smokes, right?
We covered quite a bit, and it's things that people can apply in their loan. So, Josh, tell us, how can people reach you, share your contact information with us?
Yeah, just reach out to me, josh@amplicell, AmplicellL.com. Any questions, or if you just want, you know, pick my brain, follow me over on LinkedIn, Joshua Raw, RAWE, can't miss. I'm always trying to share just valuable insights. I believe in giving value to create value for other people. And then it all makes a world go around. So always happy to help people on either of those channels. Shoot me an email or follow me on LinkedIn.
Great, great. Thank you, Josh. Great conversation. And I'm sure people loved it.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate you having me on.
Before you go, make sure to sign up with Aarti and claim your lost revenue. Visit www.getaarti.com/legends to register. You will get 1 month free and experience Aarti's features. Sign up now at www.getaarti.com/legends. This brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.